Blog Talk Radio.
Here come the Volunteers. Wherever you listen throughout the world, it's football time in Tennessee.
Checkerboard Radio with Lee Crow and Andrew Durago. Checkerboardradio.com.
Big changes were in store for the Southeastern Conference in 1992. With the addition of Arkansas and South Carolina, a super conference of 12 teams and two divisions was established. In the summer of 1992, Big Orange Country was rocked with devastating news.
Somebody had called. I think I was working at the TV station that day, and somebody called in, and I didn't believe it at first. I said, this can't happen.
Say, like a death in the family, yeah. In your own close family. The University of Tennessee football team suffered a serious loss this morning. Head trainer Tim Caron died at UT Hospital of an apparent heart attack.
It's one of those things that just knocks you back in your seat, and you sit there and look at the wall for an hour and think, my gosh, how can it happen?
The death of Tim Caron was the first in a series of events that would shake the very foundation of Tennessee football and change its landscape forever.
And I still think there's a little void in the athletic department. You don't lose a guy like Tim Caron and not still feel it.
On the heels of the Tim Caron tragedy, no one could have imagined the impact of the next news bulletin.
Good evening. UT coach Johnny Majors is in critical but stable condition tonight at UT Medical Center.
Coach Majors underwent 3.5 hours of open-heart surgery this morning.
But the season for Tennessee pushes on. There's a full-scale scrimmage tonight, the second major scrimmage of the preseason. Coach Philip Fulmer now, the assistant head coach and offensive coordinator, will take over the reins.
And I'm confident, just like Coach Majors said, he sent a message to the team, you know, straight ahead. And that's just the way that he approaches things. You'll appreciate that. Straight ahead, attack, attack, attack.
He was the offensive coordinator. He knew the offensive game plan. He was a trusted assistant, was a promising head coach candidate, and he was the obvious and I think probably at that time the only choice to take over the reins.
Thrust into a new role, he prepared for the season opener with Southwestern Louisiana. Adding to the chaos, Tennessee was beginning a new era at quarterback.
You know, and as a receiver, that's what you hope for. If you're going to get a new quarterback, please let him be able to throw the football.
Looking into the end zone, pass downfield, give it to him. Touchdown!
With hopes riding on the strong arm of Shuler, Tennessee drilled the raging Cajuns, and a new era was underway.
Give him six!
There was one other new addition to debut. Junior college transfer Charlie Garner joined Hayden, Stewart, and Phillips to complete Tennessee's powerful four-cylinder running machine that knew only one gear, forward.
Welcome to the Johnny Majors Show. Coach Majors recovering from surgery. Interim head coach Philip Fulmer, the winningest coach in major college football. He's never lost a game.
Johnny, and seriously considering retiring at this point.
With victory number one under Fulmer's belt, the Volunteers headed for Athens to meet the highly ranked Georgia Bulldogs. Sanford Stadium was filled to the rim for this SEC showdown. Entering the game, 14-point underdogs motivated Heath Shuler and the rest of the Volunteer squad. In spite of Tennessee's loaded backfield, Shuler led the team in rushing. He also led in passing.
Heath Shuler's athletic ability. We'd all heard about it. We all thought that Heath had the chance to be a very special quarterback. But that night, he made things happen out of the ordinary. And then the 4th-and-13 play, of course, basically saved the game.
Coach Cutcliffe calls a play. He said, I want to call a certain play. And everybody looked at it. It was 62 Meyer. And we kind of looked at each other and said, oh, it's going to work.
Back to throw on 4th-and-13. Shuler across the middle, complete to the 20. With the football down, he goes to the 17-yard line.
I'm Condridge Holloway here in the victorious Tennessee locker room with Heath Shuler, and I've seen a lot of games, but I've never seen a young man come through and do the things you did today.
We just came together as one unit, played really hard, and it was a team effort.
So I think everybody realized after that night that Coach Fulmer could put together the game plan, could execute, and could manage the sideline. I mean, that's the biggest thing, making the decisions on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-2 and all those. And Coach Fulmer that night was flawless.
Well, we actually beat a team that's probably better than us physically.
And we were all so happy to do that collectively as a team and a staff. We got it done, and we kind of kicked the season off in great fashion. And the sky's the limit. We at that particular time, we could have beaten anybody in the country.
We're going to take them one at a time. We are going to stick together. You're a wonderful, wonderful bunch of people. I know that you will enjoy the win to the max and stay out of trouble, fully out of trouble, so that everybody's in the hunt come Monday to get those Gators.
The Vols won 34-31, and interim head football coach Philip Fulmer was 2-0. The nation took note.
And the people here in Knoxville are beginning to talk that once Coach Majors does come back, they may lose you to another institution of higher learning as a head coach.
I've always dreamed of leading a team through the tee, and I've been through it as a player, been through it as an assistant coach, and it was sincerely one of the biggest thrills of my life to have a chance to do that.
The Georgia victory celebration didn't last long as the imposing Florida Gators came to Knoxville.
A lot of people thought, well, the next week it's going to come crashing back down to earth, but again, Coach Fulmer kept this team very focused.
I think going into the Florida game, with Florida ranked number 4, we had the attitude that we could position ourselves in the national picture.
Defense and kicking, as usual, played a major role in this one. An 11-yard run from Shuler gave the Volunteers the early lead.
Yes, yes, yes. Heath Shuler can run. Give him 6. Touchdown, Heath Shuler.
But athletic prowess would take a back seat to Mother Nature. And on this day, she was waving a big orange shaker. The squall was so bad, ABC's television feed out of Knoxville was knocked off the air. While the national audience was watching static, Mose Phillips sloshed his way in the mire 66 yards for a touchdown.
Shuler, misdirection, throws the ball. It is caught by Tennessee at the 35 to the 40, to the 45 to the 50, to the 45 to the 40, to the 35 to the 30, to the 25 to the 20, to the 15 to the 10. He has scored. He has scored. He has gone all the way.
That was a very special time to stand on the field and watch it rain. And Mose Phillips caught a swing pass out of the backfield and runs 70 yards for a touchdown. And when he gets to the end zone, he looks at his watch and he says, it's about time.
Todd Kelly and the Tennessee defense held the Gators to only 68 yards rushing and under 300 yards in total offense.
I took it so seriously. I mean, that morning, I don't think I brushed my teeth. My parents knocked on my door. I didn't answer the door. I was so much in the zone because it was an ABC game. And just when I played, I just felt like I couldn't be stopped. And that was the best game I ever played in my entire life.
That's when I realized that Philip and his guys were really turning the corner.
The Volunteers and Philip Fulmer remained undefeated with a 31-14 win over the Gators. More importantly, victories over 2 Eastern Division teams put Tennessee in the driver's seat of the SEC race.
And, you know, we really played well. We beat Georgia, who we weren't supposed to beat. We beat Florida, who we weren't supposed to beat, and really got on a roll. And I think at that time, you know, the fans and everybody kind of jumped on Coach Fulmer's bandwagon.
But it was still Coach Major's team, and when he came back, it was time for him to take back over, and we all tried to do our best to make it continue to work.
Okay, man. You're growing day to day. You're growing week to week. Attack, attack, attack. Always attack. Hit them the quickest and the hardest and the longest.
Following the victory over Florida, Johnny Majors returned and coached the Cincinnati game from the less stressful confines of the press box.
I don't think anybody ever doubted that he would return. I think everybody was just hoping that he would wait till he was totally healthy and come back. And I think as everybody looks back on it, perhaps he pushed it a little bit too much, and that caused some of the difficulties.
Philip Fulmer directed Tennessee's 4th victory in as many games from the sideline. Just 4 weeks earlier, Tennessee seemingly had no head coach. Now, for some, it had 2.
As a player, you have your loyalty to your head football coach, and that's where a lot of the players did. And it almost felt like, at a point in time, it did separate our team. We were didn't know which way to follow. And with Coach Majors coming back, it caused a conflict.
Coach Majors was back on the sideline when Tennessee won at LSU. And then things
went sour, sort of, because Tennessee lost a one-point game at home to Arkansas, then lost to Alabama.
Tennessee had lost two consecutive SEC games. The championship and the season were slipping away.
But now we understand that some fans are trying to get Coach Fulmer to return, and the way we understand it, there's a large rock outside the athletic offices there at Tennessee with the words, "Johnny is back, we want Phil." When you go to work and you see something like that, how, if at all, does it affect you, Coach?
It doesn't take a lot of guts to go out and do something in the darkness, paint a rock. It doesn't take much ingenuity.
Well, let me ask you this,
whatever.
Coach.
So, in my opinion, you're going to get some criticism, but you just keep on keeping on. But also, there's the legions of the miserable sometimes. It's always going to be miserable. So you don't let those affect how you approach your team.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time today and wish you the best of success on the football field and off with your health, Coach.
Thank you very
thanks
much,
for the
Paul.
Time
appreciate
and good luck
it.
At
okay.
South Carolina next week.
If the Vols were to meet the Western Division champion in Birmingham, they had to win out. Conference newcomer South Carolina had other ideas. Down by 7 with 2 minutes left in the game, Heath Shuler hit Mose Phillips out of the backfield and watched one of the great runs in Tennessee history.
The ball is pulled down, yanked down by Mose Phillips, who makes the catch at the 45, down to the 40, down to the 35, down to the 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. He carries the ball all the way for what? Touchdown, Big Island!
Tennessee pulled to within one. In 1992, overtime wasn't an option, and for a team on a two-game losing skid, neither was a tie.
Fighting for the yardage, he did not make it. But the Gamecock stopped the Tennessee team.
JJ, out of the tough losses, this is a crushing one.
I can't put it into words. I can't put it in words at all. It's very demoralizing.
And when Majors came back, I mean, it was a different kind of attitude. And I think that affected the outcome of those three ball games that we lost.
The losing streak had reached three, and all was not well in Big Orange country.
It was kind of a situation for Johnny that wasn't that good. And, hey, you know Tennessee football around here. You know, we could take one loss, but three in a row, it's going to be some changes.
The Volunteers had an open week to contemplate the future. For some fans and alumni, the future looked brighter with Philip Fulmer at the controls. His early season success made a lasting impression. Most didn't realize it, but the die had been cast. A coaching change was imminent.
You know, the transition there was not an easy one at all for anyone, and the circumstances that surrounded it were really, tough. You know, I think it made me very guarded. Some of the things that happened and some of the things that were said at that particular time.
It was a very gut-wrenching situation. I think at first when the news broke in midweek, nobody really believed it, that it could happen. I mean, here's Johnny Majors. You can't do that to Johnny Majors. But suddenly it turned out to be true. And the press conference in Memphis that night, I think a lot of people were still having a hard time believing this was actually happening.
The night before the Memphis State game, head coach Johnny Majors called a press conference.
I am effective December 31st, 1992, relinquishing all my duties connected with the University of Tennessee. Since the early days of watching my dad, the late Shirley Majors coach, I developed a very competitive spirit concerning football. I played hard, I coached hard, and I demanded a lot of myself and those who surrounded me. Sometimes in the heat of battle, I've occasionally said things that upon reflection I wish I hadn't. But that's been my style, and it has brought me more success than failure.
The following day, a sellout crowd packed the Liberty Bowl to witness an emotional game. But emotions overtook many before the kickoff.
You got a few guys that they broke down and cried, you know, in that meeting, and Coach Majors was one of them.
I think you thought about it.
Yeah.
Have a good time today. Play because you love it. There's a lot of you love it. I thank you. You wouldn't be out there working as hard as you did in practice. And don't get to play forever in football. And I'll tell you this. If I could have played football till I'm 57 years old, which I am right now, I'd still be playing. Still be playing because it's the greatest experience I think I ever had when I was a player.
So enjoy it while you can. Knocking the hell out of people. With a smile on your face and a good tough jaw and a good look in your eye. I don't mean a smile on your face every play, but I mean enjoy it. Take care of the faster. They're going to be keyed up. Well, I think we will too. Care of the five, Jim, keep there all day long. If you do that in football and life, you can always walk around with your head up, and your eyes alert, and you're also going to win a lot more than you lose. Think about it. Captains, you can report. You know what we're going to do, right?
In your face.
All right.
Coach Majors from the old school, and he gave us one of his old school pep talks, and it was very emotional. I really feel that's why we played so well and went out and did a great job, and we dedicated that game to him.
The end of a difficult week came to a close with a Tennessee victory. Johnny Majors walked off the field, head held high. The next week marked the final walk to Neyland Stadium for Johnny Majors. Fans came in force to say goodbye as Majors ran through the tee for the final time.
The wing back is to the wide side of the field. As Garner, as the Schuler keeps the ball, fakes the pitch to Garner, keeps himself at the three, at the two, at the one, gives him six.
Though nobody knew it at the time, the Majors' era would officially end the next week in Nashville against Vanderbilt.
Hit him the hardest and the quickest and the longest. This is a big game. Big game. Your last one of 1992 in the regular season, it's a big time game.
22 points were scored in the fourth quarter to ensure Johnny Majors would walk off the field victorious in his final game as Tennessee's head coach. Afterward, Tennessee accepted a bid to play in the Hall of Fame Bowl against Boston College. During bowl preparations, Majors announced he would not lead the team in the bowl game.
John, this is my last TV show at the University of Tennessee, and I want to tell you that There's been a lot of thrills. It's been some tough times coming here on Sunday morning sometimes after a loss and a very disappointing Saturday. And try to suck up your breath, you know, and take a deep breath and suck up your guts. But the public out there was waiting to see what we were going to talk about and also what it's going to be about the future.
You've always had a smile on your face.
Not always. I don't think so.
When you have a legend, and I don't care what sport it's in football, you want to see them go out on their own terms.
When I was growing up, he was University of Tennessee football. It was Coach Majors.
But there's still some hurt feelings. There's still some people that had trouble dealing with how the whole thing, the whole scenario played out.
You know, many times in a family situation, you know, the family, they bicker and go their different directions, but let somebody challenge the family, and then we all bond together. And I think that's very much what happened at that particular time.
I'm still kind of sad that Coach Majors right now is not a part of Tennessee athletics, Tennessee football, because deep down in my heart, I think he should be.
There was no need to conduct a search for Tennessee's 20th head football coach.
Obviously, this is a very exciting time in my life. It's something that I've always dreamed of doing, having the opportunity to coach at the great University of Tennessee. I think this is a very unique time in Tennessee history, and it's time for togetherness as a Tennessee family.
Philip Fulmer's bloodline is pure Tennessee.
This is my school, and I truly do have a love and a passion for it.
The Winchester native was a tough-as-nails offensive lineman on the Volunteer teams of 1969 through 1971. His teams posted a three-year record of 30-5. When he hung up his cleats, his coaching career began on the Knoxville campus. In 1980, after stints at Wichita State and Vanderbilt, he returned to Tennessee. Fulmer worked his way from line coach to offensive coordinator before taking over as interim head coach. Against Boston College in the Hall of Fame Bowl, the word interim was forever removed from Philip Fulmer's title. With the cloud of uncertainty lifted, the team played loose and had fun.
Holy cow, what a first play! Philip Fulmer not holding anything back.
Well, that was incredible. You know, even going back to the first play of the bowl game, you know, trying to make a statement, you know, hitting the deep ball there down to the one against Boston College and setting the initial start of the Fulmer era, if you will.
Heath Shuler was never better. As usual, the team ran the ball, but the game plan that day was a strong hint that in the year to come, the Pigskin would be logging plenty of frequent flyer miles. Shuler received the MVP trophy, and Coach Fulmer the Gatorade shower as Tennessee beat Boston College 38-23. The Fulmer era was off and running.
The momentum was built back up once again. I think that's what took it forward. You know, that flag that we were carrying, these guys are taking that flag and carrying it on.
Welcome to Checkerboard Radio, your home for all things ball, with Lee Crow, at Lee Crow, and Andrew Durego, A.W. Durego on Twitter. You're listening to Checkerboard Radio, a B-Sporto channel.
Solid fundamentals and teamwork were the watchwords for this squad.
The magic moment is here. Ladies and gentlemen, it's football time in Tennessee.
The post-Peyton Manning era begins September 5, 1998.
Give him six.
T. Martin waited 2 years for his chance. That it came in front of a hostile sellout crowd at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse mattered not to Martin.
You know, you have to understand when T. Martin started as a junior, the jury was still out whether or not he could play.
It was a lot of doubters. Anybody didn't think that his first season could come in and do the things that he'd done. But only the team knew that T. Martin was a great athlete.
When it was my time to start, man, it was my time to go out and have fun with the guys, and that's all I did.
He never backed away from a challenge, and this was no time to start. The second half was a shootout. Tennessee led 24-13 after three quarters, but Syracuse put 20 points on the board in the fourth. T. Martin remained unfazed.
Run with that football, 20, 25, 30. Martin to throw. Here's the alley-oop into the end zone. Touchdown! Careless Bright!
Syracuse banged home two field goals to take the lead, 33-31. Tennessee's back was against the wall, and Martin handled the assignment flawlessly.
Just a different type of kid. His approach was different. He was looser. And I think, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons, like in the Syracuse game, there were situations where the kids were still trying to adjust to him. Because Peyton was such a take-charge guy. He was take-charge, but it was in a totally different way.
Yes, sir, Reed. Tennessee wins. The Volunteers defeat Syracuse. I do not believe.
The win over the Orangemen gave Tennessee confidence and momentum as the Florida Gators came to Neyland Stadium 2 weeks later. Attendance records were once again shattered, and for good reason. For an early season game, the stakes in this series were always high. Win and you were in the driver's seat. Lose and you play catch-up for the rest of the season. Florida seized the early momentum and drove into Tennessee territory. The balls would not relent, but Florida quickly went back to work, but so did senior Al Wilson. He forced a fumble that was recovered by Raynock Thompson, and the Gators were held out of the end zone. Tennessee struggled to move the ball, but a big play was on the way.
Bryson breaks it to the 45, to the 50, to the 45, 40, 35, 30, into the end zone.
A Jeff Hall field goal pushed the advantage to 10-3. Florida came back to tie it at the half. Obviously, points were at a premium. Defense was the name of this game. Senior Peerless Price finally broke free for just a moment. And that moment was all T. Martin needed.
He grabbed it. Where did he grab it? In the end zone.
Florida countered, and the game was tied at 17. The fourth quarter went scoreless, thanks in large part to sophomore Deion Grant.
Intercepted. Pulled away by Deion Grant.
For the first time in Tennessee football history, there was going to be overtime.
The kick by Hall is in the air. The kick by Hall is good.
Hall was true from 41 yards, and the Volunteers had a three-point overtime advantage. If Tennessee was to win, it was up to the defense. The D gave up a first down, but no more. On fourth down, Florida coach Steve Spurrier opted for a tying field goal to force another extra period.
Snap, the kick is in the air, and the kick this time is no, sir, Ree. No, sir, Ree. Final score, Tennessee 20, Florida 17. Pandemonium reigns.
Tennessee had done it. The Volunteers knocked off the Gators 20-17.
I think it's one of the most exciting moments that I've ever had a chance to be involved with in athletics or anything else. It truly was a moment of elation for Tennessee football to have gotten over that hump and beaten a really fine Florida team.
It would go down as a landmark win and propel the Vols into the lead of the SEC East Championship race.
And I tell you what, we owe a huge, huge hip hip hooray for our defense. Yeah!
Next on the Vol Quest came a trip to the plains of Auburn, Alabama. Third-ranked Tennessee was heavily favored, and Sean Ellis was one reason why.
Sean Ellis running with the football down the left.
Ellis would be named Defensive Player of the Week for his efforts.
He made it!
Jeff Hall's efforts made it 10-0. Then Jamal Lewis got the ball.
This will be Jamal Lewis pounding up the middle, breaking into...
Tennessee was in complete control, 17-0. The defense was called on to show its championship form when the Tigers got the ball on the one-foot line.
Going off? No, no.
The defense bowed its back and beat Auburn 17-9. But all was not good in the Tennessee camp. Tailback Jamal Lewis was lost for the rest of the season. Lewis was Tennessee's big gun, and without him, the coaches wondered from where the firepower would come. Tennessee looked for an answer the next week between the hedges.
He was a little bit frustrated. He wanted to get out there and wing it and run the full offense. And they really kept the harness on him.
You know, it was frustrating. And sometimes you go into a game and say, man, I know we can win the game in a better fashion than this. You know, come on, coach. And, you know, 6-7 game of the season, he started doing that. And we started blowing people out. And I was like, all right, we're having fun now.
If the coaches were reluctant to lean heavily on T. Martin in the first three games, they now had little choice.
Martin back to throw, looking, waiting, pass across the middle, complete.
Tennessee went to the air more in this game and relied on the talents of Martin.
This is Martin, faking, looking, pass into the end zone is... Get it to him. Touchdown!
The junior quarterback showed the coaches that they could win without Jamal Lewis, especially when the dynamic duo of Travis Henry and Travis Stevens lined up behind him. A short 3-yard pass to Peerless Price added insurance.
Give him six!
The team hit its stride and they dominated the Dogs 22-3.
You didn't all the way slam the door, but you damn sure shut it pretty tight! Right now! Because right now, you are one of the finest football teams in America!
Tennessee was 5-0, headed into the showdown with Alabama.
It's Alabama, and it's football time in Tennessee.
In workmanlike fashion, T. Martin directed the Vols to two first-half scores. In the second half, the lead was cut to 14-11, but Peerless Price
had the ball in front to the 5, to the 10, to the 15, to the 20, to the outside 25-30. Penalty marker down as Price is racing down the near sideline and will take it all the way home. It is a penalty against Alabama.
With the lead now 21-11, Tennessee turned to the ground attack and Travis Henry.
He
scored 2 fourth quarter touchdowns and rushed for 113 yards. Tennessee turned back the tide 35-18. The Vols were suddenly 6-0 for the first time since Philip Fulmer's playing days. The Volunteers spent the Halloween weekend in Columbia, South Carolina. Tennessee's offense, or more specifically T. Martin, was never better.
Touchdown, Tennessee.
Martin was on target, clicking off pass after pass.
We're calling the game, and suddenly you start looking where he's 5-for-5, he's 10-for-10. He's 15-for-15, and he just keeps going and going.
Throwing into the end zone. Give it to him. Into the end zone. Pass is complete for a touchdown. Martin throws out here, pull down behind the line, breaking a tackle to the 30, to the 35. To the...
Every pass, you know, I throw it, complete it, forget about it. You know, go on to the next one. I was taking the play by play. And I went to the sideline, everybody looking at me funny, and Coach Cutcliffe called a play that we hadn't called since the screen. I said, why did he call this play? You know, maybe he had seen something, you know, that, you know, from the press box. But I went out, completed the pass, and the crowd started clapping. I'm like, why are these South Carolina fans clapping? We're killing them. You know, why are they clapping?
Copeland hauled in Martin's 22nd consecutive pass to tie an NCAA record. The mark was broken with a completion to Peerless Price.
All of a sudden, all the South Carolina fans started clapping. And that was the real special thing about it. I think everybody knew that they had just seen something they'll never see again. And T. Martin was so flawless that day. It's hard to imagine anybody could play quarterback at Tennessee any better than T. Martin did that day.
It was amazing. It was a blessing. You know, I still don't know how I did it. If I can go out right now and try to throw it to you 24 times, I don't know if I could make it.
Tennessee rolled to a 49-14 win on this record-setting day.
Not Tennessee, not Southeastern Conference, all Tennessee.
Having an NCAA record, you know, which you just think how many years and years and years of NCAA football and how many passes have been thrown by how many great quarterbacks, you know, I think that really makes a statement for his greatness.
The Vols were 7-0. Undefeated Tennessee moved to the top of the college football polls the next week after beating UAB 37-13 for the 8th victory of the season.
Everything is riding on this football game.
Well, you thought the Arkansas game, the way that thing unfolded, that the football gods have to be aligned somehow.
Here come the Volunteers, wherever you listen throughout the world. It's football time in Tennessee.
No, I don't think that's one of the best teams that you had in the 90s. I do think it was a team of destiny, and for people who don't believe in destiny, go back and look at that game.
Tennessee, last chance probably in the football game. This is Martin stepping up across the middle. Pass is broken up, incomplete. And so Arkansas stops Tennessee, leading by 2. On the fourth down try, Tennessee fails.
I'd say everybody in the stadium, except maybe for those players, were a little bit suspect of maybe pulling that game off.
This will be a major upset win for the Razorbacks, coming to Knoxville undefeated at 8-0, about to head back to Fayetteville 9-0.
I knew we had the heart, you know, if tested, that we can, you know, dig deep down and gel together and pull it out.
Our team was very much that way, and they had enough of the right type people and enough character on the football team that if we got the ball back, I felt like that we would have a chance.
I didn't take my equipment off because when I was coming off of the football field, Billy Ratliff told me he was going to get the ball back. So I'm looking at Billy like, yeah, you said it, you know, but I don't know if you can do that or not.
And I was standing there and I heard Billy tell T that, and I, you know, that was exciting in itself. And I think these kids still got this kind of confidence.
So I went on to the sideline, talked to Coach Cutler. He's like, good game, you know, hopefully the defense can do something. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, they do.
Arkansas will have the ball. Tennessee has one timeout remaining. 1:47 to go in the game. And Arkansas comes to the line with Sterner putting his team in the I formation.
And I turned and looked at Billy. I said, Billy, we got to make something happen right here. We can't lose. We got to make something happen. And I'll be dogged if he didn't make something happen.
The tailback is Shakuma. Two receivers to the left side.
I don't know. He just had that look in his eye.
Sterner lost the football! Goodness! He stumbled and fumbled, and Billy Ratliff recovered.
I think that was one of the slowest plays I've ever been in. I think that ball was there for at least 3 seconds. And I mean, I'm looking at it, thinking how I'm going to get this ball.
And Billy Ratliff is on top of it to recover at the 43-yard line.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, my goodness, I got to get it.
When we did go back to the field, I felt like we were going to win the football game because our kids just hit the field with so much determination.
Trailing by 2 points, 24-22. Travis Henry through the left side. This is Henry with the football, refusing to be denied.
Every time I came in the huddle, they wanted to run the ball.
Henry has a huge hole. Travis Henry inside the 20.
Tennessee just proceeded to do what it had to do to win.
This will be Travis Henry spinning, driving, fighting, carries the ball down to the 2-yard line.
You know, he pounded until we got to the end zone and won that game.
They need to go to Henry. This will be Henry. He dives. Give him 6. Touchdown, Tennessee. Here comes the blitz. Here is Martin.
The following week, there was no letdown against Kentucky. The Volunteers roared to a 59-21 victory.
Down, touch. Down, touch, down, Tennessee!
This is Zolman back to throw.
Zolman across the middle. Pass is complete.
The SEC Eastern Division Championship belonged to the Vols as Vanderbilt fell in the regular season finale, 41-0. Tennessee was now off to the SEC Championship game for the second straight season. This team of destiny finished the regular season undefeated. Championship Saturday proved a wild ride for teams competing in the BCS. Supposed shoe-ins were dropping like flies on what was termed Upset Saturday. Headed into the 8 o'clock SEC Championship game, the list of casualties included UCLA and Kansas State. Mississippi State represented the Western Division, and in the early going, many wondered if Upset Saturday would claim another victim. Tennessee answered with 10 points in the second quarter. A Jeff Hall 31-yard field goal was the last score for either team until the fourth quarter. The Bulldogs had only 65 yards rushing all night, but its kicking game kept the upset bid alive. Now, with less than 9 minutes to go, Tennessee was forced into comeback mode again. T. Martin had been there before.
It is 6 big points. Give them a TD.
Tennessee led 17-14. It was enough for the win, but a little insurance never hurt, so Corey Terry forced a fumble. After Eric Westmoreland recovered, Tennessee went for the knockout.
Looking into the end zone, downfield, it will be Wilson. Give it to him!
I think that was one of the happiest moments of our team because, I mean, that shut the doors for anything. Any question that anybody had, is Tennessee ready to play in the Fiesta Bowl?
The Volunteers were now 12-0 and had won back-to-back SEC championships for the second time in a decade. It was a wonderful way to say goodbye to a great offensive coordinator. David Cutcliffe was leaving Tennessee to accept the head coaching position with Ole Miss. There was one bit of business left in the 1998 season. Thanks to the day's upsets of BCS contenders, a far more imposing contender rose from the rubble. Florida State would meet Tennessee in the Fiesta Bowl for all the marbles.
I don't think anybody was intimidated about playing against, quote, Bobby Bowden in the Florida State Seminoles. I think our team looked forward to it. They were very confident going in.
I remember Mike Gottfried and I talked, and I said, you know, I don't have any question in my mind that they're not going to win the national championship because this team is supposed to win. It's just been written that way.
I'll tell you again, guys, I love every one of you.
The BCS couldn't have asked for a more beautiful setting for its marquee matchup.
I remember looking up, you know, right before kickoff, right before the ball was kicked off, and, you know, all the flashes, you know, everybody taking pictures. It was amazing just to see all the lights going. But I was so focused on what I had to do. They could have dropped a bomb in the middle of the field. I probably wouldn't have even saw it. You know, I was just so focused on Florida State. You know, I had film study. You know, we had won 12 games in a row. And by no means I let that last one slip through my fingers.
What time is it? You know. As Tennessee comes barreling out onto the greensward of the Fiesta Bowl in Tempe, Arizona, it's football time in Tennessee.
You know, my thoughts were, you know, just to lay it all on line. You know, don't leave anything out there on the field. You know, you have 60 minutes to prove to the whole world that you're the number one.
New offensive coordinator Randy Sanders cut his teeth in the biggest game of the year. The game was scoreless in the first quarter, but that changed early in the second.
3-2-1, give him six.
Tennessee led 7-0. FSU quarterback Marcus Autzen wanted to get the ball to All-American receiver Peter Warwick, and Dwayne Goodrich made him pay.
Intercepted Tennessee at the 45, to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, to the 35, to the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Touchdown, Tennessee!
T. Martin's work wasn't finished. Up by only 5 in the fourth quarter, Martin looked for breathing room.
Got in the hold, I said, Pierce, look bad. I'm going to fake. As soon as I come out of this fake, I'm throwing that ball. You know, you just run down the field, I'm putting it down there.
Going to throw the ball long, long downfield for Fearless Price. It is complete. He makes the catch at the 45. He's at the 40.
Tennessee was the national champion.
Just give it to him.
This team of destiny would not accept defeat. It was the first time in school history a team had ever won 13 games.
Tonight you represented the state of Tennessee, and the men that have worn that orange shirt have taken 47 years to get it back in Knoxville, Tennessee,
but tonight you got the national championship. Hip, hip, hooray!
T. Martin waited 2 years to show the fans what he could do. Now he was a national champion and undefeated as a starter.
It was one of the greatest feelings of my life, really, as far as playing football. You know, to be in the biggest game of college football and having such a big contribution to the team's winning effort. You know, and thanks to my teammates and coaching staff, they let us go out and play ball, and we brought it home.
It was a night and a season that will never be forgotten. And for the retiring John Ward, he finally uttered the words fans had waited long enough to hear.
Five, four, three, two, one. The national champion is clad in big orange.
Plenty of players.
You're listening to Checkerboard Radio, a V-Sporto channel. Welcome to Checkerboard Radio, your home for all things ball, with Lee Crow, at Lee Crow, and Andrew Durego, A.W. Durego on Twitter. You're listening to Checkerboard Radio, a V-Sporto channel.
Welcome into Checkerboard Radio here on Ball Sports Radio, a V-Sporto channel, where all ball fans want to run to. I'm Andrew Durego. Joining me, as always, is Lee Crow, doing it a little differently today since I'm going out of town tonight to D.C. for the weekend. So no show this upcoming Sunday, but we're excited to do a little short show today. Lee, how are you doing today, my friend?
I am awesome, man. Just fired up to be here. Just ready to get into it. I can't wait to talk to Quincy.
Yeah, that's kind of the big thing we've got going on today is quarterback coach Quincy Avery, who's out in Oregon at the Elite 11 camp, joining us in about 15 minutes or so to talk about Josh Dobbs, who is a counselor at the camp this weekend. If you haven't read that on checkerboardradio.com, and also out there is 2016 Vol quarterback commit Jarrett Garantano. You've seen a bunch of film from the scouting experts and recruiting experts on Twitter this week of the throws that Garantano has been making. So we're actually going to really excited to have Quincy, who's a good friend of the show, on to talk about what he's been seeing out there working with these guys. He's been working with Dobbs for years. He's been working with Garantano recently at the Elite 11 camps around the country. So it's going to be good to get one of our good friends on the line to talk about some of that. One thing that we did want to talk about towards the end of the show today is one of our favorite 2016 recruits, Parker Boudreau, who finally made his announcement from his 200-plus offers, I think he's saying at this point. I'm not sure where he's at. The one thing I did kind of want to lead off with, Lee, because it seemed kind of odd with me this week, local sports radio host Jimmy Hyams, he's kind of sporadic on Twitter. He'll go a couple, three mm-hmm. days without tweeting, and then he'll rapid fire out a bunch. 2 days ago, he kind of did, like I said, a little rapid burst of tweets touching on something we talked about on Sunday. One was John Kelly and Quay Piku. John Kelly is enrolled. He does have a number now that, as we discussed, you said he's number four on the roster. Quay yep. Piku has not enrolled, but you've said he's listed in the directory. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's the Quavius PQ in the roster on the registry anyway. I'm not sure how that works, but he just popped in there. I've been checking those two names the entire summer, and he popped in there the weekend before second session.
And also one of the things that I've read on message boards about PQ is, you know, is it a clearinghouse issue? It looks like it's just he had some summer school to take care of. And it looks like he's wrapping that up. So I expect him on campus by the end of this month, you know, once the classes are taken care of. So when August camp starts, the other thing that Hyams tweeted about, and this seemed kind of odd to me, was about the UT bowl rings for the Tax Slayer / Gator Bowl, which one you want to call it. He said UT did not give bowl ring to players who didn't make the bowl trip or transferred without taking care of academics, costing UT an APR point. Those players that didn't attend the bowl game were Daniel Helm, DeAndre Payne, Darrell Scott, Jalen Miller, Dwayne Hendricks, A.J. Johnson, and Mike Williams. Justin King, Dre Bowles, and Peterman got a bowl ring because they graduated from UT before transferring. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. Von Pearson, Vic Wharton, Ryan Jenkins, Michael Sawyers, and quarterback Mike Wegson did not get bowl rings.
Right. That leads us into our count, which is day 75 for Pearson. 75. He's 10 days short of the 85 charging day for A.J. Williams and Michael Williams. A.J. Johnson and Michael Williams. So there's got to be something happen like fairly soon, I would imagine. This is like incredibly long for Pearson to be a suspect.
Yeah, well, and the thing that I'm trying to pull up the stat sheet, because I could have sworn Von Pearson played in the bowl game.
You know, I don't even remember. I probably watched that game like 10 times. I don't remember whether he played or not. He didn't make an impact, I know that.
I'm trying to pull up the stat sheet to see if he registered anything. Von Pearson had 7 catches and 75 yards and a touchdown in the bowl game.
Yeah, wow.
And that's why, because it said he was under investigation. And then it said Vic Wharton didn't get it, I guess, because he transferred.
Right.
But the question I wanted to ask you or bring up to you is, do you think Vic Wharton should have gotten a ring? I mean, the guy did have a big 49-yard touchdown. Just, you know, give him one as like a farewell.
I mean, that's a gray area. I really don't know. I mean, I guess if you were on the roster when they were ordered or something, maybe. I don't know if he had transferred before they ordered him. I'm sure they all had to get sized and everything. So I'm sure they didn't just drop a box of generic sized rings on these cats. So I'm sure they sized them all and placed orders. So I don't know, you know, if they were still around when they ordered them or what. I mean, it's hard. I mean, they didn't get them until they got them months later. So I don't know if they were on the order or not.
Maybe, I guess, Pearson didn't get his because he was suspended when they received them. The other mm-hmm. kind of weird thing that Hyams tweeted out was about quarterback Mike Wegson. He told UT he was transferring, then decided to participate in Pro Day, and UT acted on his initial request.
And he still didn't get a ring. That's just super odd.
Well, and that's
super odd.
And Wegzin's more than able to make his own decisions, but if you transfer down from UMass, you tell UT you're going to transfer again, but then you decide to participate in Pro Day. And that kind of brings up, it's odd to me, especially when, a source of mine close to the university kind of almost angrily asked why I was asking a lot of questions about Wegzin back in the springtime when he was taken off the roster without mention.
Yeah, that whole thing is just weird to me. That whole thing was where we've chronicled that a bunch of times, but that whole thing with Wegzin is just odd.
Just a weird situation with that. I want to touch on these a little. I want to get to maybe half of these really quick before we get in with Quincy in a couple minutes. Lee, you put out some predictions for the 2015 season on checkerboardradio.com. I want to get through a couple of them, and then we'll wrap them up after we speak with Quincy. Your first one, you called it. You said Vols win the East. Where's your logic?
Yeah. Well, we did that way too early, like right after spring season prediction, and I have them right there in the 9-3 area. I think that's going to be good enough to win, and they get Georgia at home, and Georgia, who's the strongest contender, I think outside the Vols. A lot of people have Georgia, like some people I've seen have Georgia, top five in their little preseason deal, but they draw Bama and Auburn as their two West opponents. That's like the worst you could possibly draw. I mean, they're staring at two losses right off the bat. I don't think they'll beat either one of those teams. I don't think they'll beat Bama and Georgia. And I'm pretty sure they won't beat Auburn on the road. I'm thinking Auburn's going to be very formidable with Muschamp at BC. I think I've got them picked to win the West already, and possibly the whole thing. So they draw the worst two West opponents you could possibly draw, and they get the Vols on the road. So I'll give the slight edge to the Vols, and they slide in with a 9-3 East championship.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Georgia as one of the things that will possibly make it, a Tennessee win could put Tennessee in position to win the East. I'm putting out my predictions sometime next week, hopefully. I want to kind of give you a preview of one and see what you think on it. I'm going very, very specific on this one. My prediction right now, and it pertains to Georgia, is Aaron Medley hits a game winner against Georgia.
I can see that. I can see that. I mean, they've played the three-point games, the last 2 years or the last 3 years they've had three-point games with Georgia? I think it's like 2 years in a row at least they've had games with Georgia. So I could see that again. I mean, that's right in the script.
And I think that's what it'll finally be. I think that game's going to be just a knockdown drag-out with Georgia's running game. I think Tennessee's going to buckle down in their running game and say, let's just drag this out and see who comes out on top. I mean, I could see it being a 31-28 game, and I'm calling Medley to hit the game winner. You've got me verbally saying it right now. We'll get me on paper putting it down next week. But your next one, you have Dobbs running for less rushing yards than he did last year.
Yeah, he ran for, I think, 469 was the net, which is, I think that was like second or third best in the SEC. As far as quarterbacks go, I don't think he'll have to do that this year. I think he'll be a lot more active in passing. He'll take some more of those pass option reads. And I think he's got Kamara and Hurd back there. And I think they'll be consciously not have as many called quarterback runs just because they've got three true freshmen behind him. There's a lot of called quarterback runs the last two, three games of the season. And even in the bowl game, I mean, there's a lot of called quarterback runs. I don't think you'll see as many of those this year.
Yeah, he rushed for 469 last year. A lot of those, I don't think, were designed quarterback runs. They were him scrambling with the offensive line last year. We've already seen an improvement in the offensive line. And like you said, with Hurd and Kamara, and this is something we talked back once Kamara got on campus, was that takes a lot of pressure off Dobbs. And also, you don't want him running as much because that leads to potential injury, and that means you're going to have a true freshman coming in.
So I think that's very – I mean, if you look around the SEC, I mean, like Dakota – what's his name? Prescott at Mississippi State, I think he led the league in quarterback rushing last year. I don't have the number in front of me, but Dak Prescott?
Yeah.
For Mississippi State, I think he led the league in rushing for Mississippi State. And he had about 900 yards, I believe. I think I was looking at that 2 days ago. So I don't think anybody else will come close to that this year. And I'm pretty sure Dobbs will have less than he did the year before. So we'll see. I mean, that's just what I think. I think it'll turn out differently for him.
Well, and also, I mean, and you've seen it in pictures, especially at the Elite 11 camp that Dobbs is at right now. He's put on a little weight. But Dak Prescott, I think his frame is able to handle it a lot more than Dobbs would be, because Dak Prescott's a big kid.
Yeah.
He led the SEC with 986. Nick Marshall was there at 798. Then Dobbs third with 469. Quarterback-wise, Dobbs 25th in the SEC rushing yard-wise. That's impressive to be that high up as – the six games he played in. And it kind of showed, mm-hmm. but like I said, I you could tell watching those games last year, a lot of it wasn't designed quarterbacks runs. It was him taking off for daylight after somebody just burst through the line on him.
I think they will try to protect him a little bit and have as, have as few quarterback runs as possible with the studs back there of Kamara and Hurd, and just don't take the chance on getting him injured. But I'm pretty sure Josh will still get his. I just don't think he'll have the 469 rushing like he did last year.
Yeah, and this next one, Lee, I'll let you go ahead and get Quincy on the line, and I can discuss this because I agree with you 100%. Drew Richmond starts at left tackle as a true freshman. If it's not left, it's going to be right. He's going to be leaps and bounds already better than anybody on the roster. It's going to just be probably a little growing pains with getting him taken care of and growing up a little bit, getting used to playing college ball. But I think we're going to see him get reps against Bowling Green and get him ready for, Oklahoma the following week. And we are now proud to have on our good friend, Quincy Avery, quarterback guru, Stars. Quincy, what's going on, my friend?
Nothing much. How you guys doing?
We're doing well, man. We appreciate you taking time out of your day. We know you're busy out there in Oregon with the Elite 11 camp that you always have been a part of, doing a lot of stuff, great stuff out there. You're one of many coaches out there. I know Trent Dilfer's been out there and a bunch of other NFL guys, Willie McGinnis, Jordan Palmer, and Aeneas Williams. And, this time around it's a little bit different. You have one of your players essentially out there as a counselor. Josh Dobbs is out there with JT Barrett and Cody Kessler and Christian Hackenberg as counselors. You were out there when Josh was a participant, and now he's out there as a counselor. So what's it like to see him in this new role in the Elite 11 camp?
It's impressive. It's fun to see him as a leader, and you kind of I've got the opportunity to see him grow into just being a leader and guys following him and kind of taking his lead. So it's really impressive to see who he is as an adult. He's an adult now. Known him for so long since he was 15 years old, and we've been working so much since then. And seeing who he is now, it's just cool. Different perspective. He has a different perspective on things. He has the opportunity to kind of change his goals. Goals got a little bigger, and it's cool.
Hey, tell our listeners, Quincy, a little bit about what the Elite 11 is. I mean, we know it is because we follow recruiting, but I mean, those names just passed through there, like just Matt Leinart, Vince Young, Jamarcus Russell, Mark Sanchez, Josh Freeman, Jake Locker. I mean, it's a who's who of people that come through the Elite 11. So tell the listeners exactly what goes on out there and a little bit about the competition amongst the quarterbacks.
It's crazy. It turns out to be about 70% of NFL quarterbacks have gone through some sort of the Elite 11 process. So in terms of being a big deal, it's a big deal. But we go through a regional process where we vet the top high school players in the country. We narrow it down to 30. of the top high school guys in the country at a semifinal program. And from there, we get 18 of essentially who Coach Dilfer thinks are the best high school quarterbacks in the country to come together at the finals in Oregon to get coached up by the best coaches in the country. And then we're joined by 100-some-odd skill position players as well as linemen as we compete in a 7-on-7 process.
Quincy, one of the things that's been getting a lot of press this week, especially in the Knoxville area, is one of the campers this year in Jarrett Garantano, who is a Vol commit. We've seen countless vines of the deep ball hitting the target and coming close to actually getting it in the target. And I know you've worked with him in the past. What have you seen out of him over the, you know, since this camp started on Sunday that's impressed you, or some things, you know, down the road you might, as you're coaching him, say, you might want to work on this?
Fortunate enough, I get Jarrett on my team for the 7-on-7, so I get to see him basically more than about any other kid here at the program. And he has an absolute cannon. I mean, there's not many guys anywhere who throw the ball. I mean, he has a hose. He can throw it anywhere he wants. I think it's just impressive just watching the ball come out of his hand. It's a lot of fastballs, which is, I mean, it's really cool to see somebody at his size. It's a ton of energy just leaving his hand and hitting receivers pretty much where he wants it at this point. For him to be that young with that type of arm talent, it's exciting what he's going to have. I mean, and it's a maturity process. What I was going to say, what he has to do is just get a little bit bigger. It's probably about 185, 190 now. He's just going to have to be a bigger kid in terms of getting ready to play in the SEC. But as far as what they're doing offensive-wise at Tennessee, he's going to fit that great. He can move. He's built like a stud. I mean, he looks good, but his arm talent is absolutely phenomenal.
There's a lot of good young high school talent out there. I'm kind of going to put you on the spot because you've been out there looking at them for 3-4 days now. So, I mean, there's a lot of good young talent out there. A few of them are going to the SEC. They may be future opponents for the Vols. I know we're a Vols radio show, but talk us a little bit about these kids. There's Shane Buchel out there, Anthony Russo, Dwayne Haskins, Garantano, like we mentioned, KJ Costello, Nick Starkle, Jacob Eason, a Georgia commit, 5-star. If Quincy's starting a team, pick one of these kids out of that bunch. Who's Quincy taking as his quarterback?
Oh, man, that's so tough trying to project these guys at 17. Give me a couple of days, and I'll be able to give you a better answer when we start going against some real bullets, seeing 7-on-7. There's so many guys who are so impressive. Just watching what they do right now. I mean, as we said, it's the best high school kid. So yeah. I think we'll see a little bit of separation coming up pretty soon. We've got to get a 7-on-7. But, I mean, I've seen Jacob Eason throw a fade yesterday, and it looked absolutely amazing. I had that flight school down in Georgia not too long ago. We had Eason. We had Shea Patterson. We had Juwan Pass. So those are three of the top guys in the country. They were down there for about a week, and I saw Eason throw an 80-yard bomb, which is absolutely insane coming out of a high schooler's hand. So, I mean, I've seen so much of these guys it's tough to say, hey, just now it depends on my offense. If I wanted to run a spread like Tennessee, I'd probably say, hey, let me get Jarrett. There's some things that Dwayne Haskins does that you're like, if I want a team that's just going to throw the ball, I want him. So there's so many. If there's a thing for this guy, there's a thing for this guy, and it's going to be interesting to see how their collegiate coaches use them, because they could be this is a special group. This is one of the special groups that I've got an opportunity
to. Quincy, with a lot of the stuff we see, like I mentioned previously, from the Elite 11, we just see these 5-6 second, you know, vines of, you know, a nice deep throw or a quick, you know, routes versus air or something in 7-on-7. What are some of the drills outside of 7-on-7 that you work with the quarterbacks on?
One of the big drills, and probably Coach Dilfer's favorite drill, is comp decline. So it gives these guys an opportunity to have to get off platform and then get back on platform. The term platform is really just kind of like a triple threat in basketball, being able to do everything from one position, whether it's throw, run, or avoid a defender. And that drill is kind of all-encompassing. Can you move? Can you get back balance? Because that's one of the biggest issues is how the guys get balanced. So I think in terms of drill work, that's one of our big deals, is getting these guys in uncomfortable position, making them get back comfortable and throw a good ball. And then we do a bunch of drills in terms of concepts that we're doing out here. So we got an extensive playbook that we ask these guys to learn and get an understanding of that. So our playbook work is pretty intensive too.
Well, that's one of the things, Quincy, I've always been impressed with you, and you know, following you on Instagram and your work outside of Elite 11 with the Youth Passing League and your flight school, is you also do the classroom work. What is some of that classroom work that you do with these players at the Elite 11?
The classroom work that we do at Elite 11 is really focused on route concepts, what we're doing with their eyes, whether it's just a pure progression passing play, which Tennessee does a lot of, or it's like a progression with the option. I see this, look, I'm going to go right here, go right to progression. The things I do in terms of the board are a lot more defense-centric, kind of providing the guys with the opportunity to understand this is what a defense wants to do in this situation, or this is what they're doing in this coverage. So if it's cover three, we're not just going to cover, free safety has a middle third, corner has an outside third, this corner has an outside third. But rather, this corner has to split the difference between the two vertical threats. And so we try to get a lot more detailed in the things we do. And I think when guys get an understanding at that high level as a high school or a collegiate guy, it puts them in a real advantage. So you can go to the line of scrimmage and say, hey, this is where the defense is in a bind before the play starts.
I know you got Josh out there working this week. I know some of the folks in Vol Nation are going to kind of wonder what he's doing. What he's doing out there as a mentor. I'm sure they don't want you working him too hard out there, Q.
Actually, yeah, Josh is – I mean, guys love Josh. I think I told you before how helpful he is to younger guys. And I think he's going to be really, really important in terms of the Tennessee Vols future, not just for the way he plays this upcoming year, but the way he mentors the guys that are going to be on campus. You guys got a talented group of young guys, Jones and the others coming in, and you can see Jarrett kind of looking up to Josh, just kind of hovering around him while he was out there. So as an ambassador of the program, but not only that, as a guy who's helping those guys out, hey, this is what we do, and this is when we do it, and this is why we do it on the field. He's going to be really important if the quarterback position is going to stay up to the standard that he's going to set these next 2 years. It is going to be important for him to be helpful in that way.
Quincy, one of the last things I want to ask you before we let you go, a lot of the fans in Knoxville and even some of the other local media have kind of been asking, why doesn't Jarrett Garantano have a fifth star on the recruiting services? If you were in charge of a Rivals or 27 or 247 Sports, would you give him that fifth star?
I would give him the fifth star, but that's based on his camp search. So I think those guys do a lot better job evaluating high school tape. If I looked at his highlight tape and then I looked at him here, I would give him a fifth star. He had his fifth star a month ago. The last two camps I've seen him at, he's been stroking it. But I have to see game tape. If I went to one of his games and saw him out there, I would be really, really excited. Like, if I saw what I see on these highlight tapes, then there's no question he should have a fifth star. So that's just the question. Is the things that I've seen and the settings that he's been in, is that transferable to the game? If so, he deserves a fifth star.
Well, Quincy, man, we appreciate you coming on with us and taking time out of your day. I know you've got a hectic schedule out there in Oregon. Hopefully we'll get to talk to you soon. Hope you have safe travels back to Georgia. Tell everybody that's listening how they can follow you on Twitter and some of the other programs that you're involved with.
On Instagram, it's just really simple, Quincy Avery. Quincy, last name Avery. And then Twitter, Quincy_Avery. I think you guys got a whole bunch to be excited about out in Knoxville. The amount of work that Dobbs has put in is just, I think it's next level between the classroom, the things he does work-wise, and then the things I've seen him do on the field in this short period of time. We didn't have a competition, per se, out here, but we did some things where all the college counselors went on the field, and you look, and you're like, wow, if this is the things that are going to happen next year for these guys, you guys are going to be playing in some big ball games. And I look forward to seeing what you guys do in the SEC East. I would, if I was a betting man, that's where I'd throw my chips at. I'd invest in that stock.
Well, again, Quincy Avery, thank you for giving us a call and joining the show to talk us about the Elite 11, man. Like I said,
thank
I hope you.
You
have a safe trip back home, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good. I hope you guys have a good one.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That was Quincy Avery of the Elite 11 passing camp there in Oregon right now. Quincy also does great work with the Youth Passing League, and he has his own flight school, as he calls it. Does great work working with quarterbacks. So make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Quincy_Avery on Twitter. He also has a great blog on QuincyAvery.com. He throws some stuff up on about quarterbacks. Make sure you check it out. We do have a caller from the 706 area code. 706, what's going on?
Hey, it's Chris from Georgia. Hey.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is the first time I've ever actually had to listen to you guys live. Usually listen to you on the Vol Sports Radio app. But I was going to ask Quincy, but, I mean, I can ask you guys, too. With him just – he was talking about Ethan. And, I mean, Ethan, if you watch him, he's got just raw talent. I mean, he's got the size. He's got the arm. Everybody says he's the next Matt Stafford. And that's all been well, but – do you believe that he has a quarter or a coach at Georgia that will develop him into a Matt Stafford style quarterback? Because I mean, Mike Bobo, as much hate as he got from Georgia fans, because I think his biggest issue, he was always trying to outsmart everybody on the field. But when it came back to quarterback development, he's the best, one of the best in the games. I mean, he developed two record breaking quarterbacks in Aaron Murray and David Green. So do you think Schottenheimer has the ability to develop Ethan, or even the quarterbacks they got now? I just don't see their quarterback game being good this year.
It remains to be seen, really. But you know, I agree with you on Bobo. But they haven't had a lot to work with down there at quarterback in a little bit with these last couple of years. But Ethan could probably change all that. I mean, it's a hell of a lot easier to work with a guy that's got those kind of skills, like I'm sure you know. So. I mean, it remains to be seen, but Ethan could make a big difference. As long as you've got that running game and those offensive linemen, I mean, it's easy to bring a quarterback along, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Georgia, I think the biggest thing with Ethan coming in, which Georgia, they're kind of like Alabama with the offensive line. They can reload real easy. For some reason, kids love to go for offensive line, but they graduate. They've got all their offensive line are junior and senior, so they could lose a lot of big game position players. Mm-hmm. And then I just don't know how good of a year Rick will have down there, honestly, without quarterback play. If you don't get their wide receivers are a little undersized, and if quarterbacks don't develop into good, solid pass throwers and game managers, then everybody's just going to – Kurt Majette and Derek Barnett and Khalil McKenzie are just going to key in on Nick Chubb, Sony Michel. And those guys showed their durability last year. I mean, Nick Chubb was durable, but Sony Michel, Keith Marshall, they all have durability issues. And if you're 30, 40 carries a game and you're getting hit at the line for 20 of them, you're not going to last that long. And I think Georgia's in for a worse year than a lot of people are seeing them for. But, I mean, that's my opinion. But I appreciate you guys taking the call, and I'll be listening. And I hope you guys have a good rest of your evening.
All right,
man. We appreciate you calling in, Chris. To kind of add on to what Chris said, you know, can they develop Jacob Eason down in Georgia? Brian Schottenheimer is the offensive coordinator. I mean, he's worked with Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers back in San Diego, Brett Favre and Sanchez with the Jets, Sam Bradford with the Rams. I mean, think about it. Brees was kind of mediocre in San Diego, then bounced to New Orleans, and turned great. Phillip Rivers has been consistent. And, I mean, I'd put Phillip Rivers top 10 NFL quarterback right now.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately for the quarterback position, you're probably right. I mean, that's probably accurate. So.
Yeah, I mean, Phillip Rivers top 10. Brett, I mean, at the point where Brett Favre is with the Jets, he brought everything Schottenheimer probably said to Favre went in one ear and out the other. And we've seen how Sanchez's NFL career is gone. And then Sam Bradford, you know, verdict's still out if he can stay healthy and play. The other thing I wanted to add, and Chris made a good point, with how these running backs are at Georgia. It's almost gotten to the point where you just put somebody back there and hand them off the ball, and it doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah.
That's kind of the joke. That's kind of the joke I've been making with this upcoming season. Is everybody, you know, in Vol Nation said, "Oh, we'll beat Tennessee. They don't have a quarterback this year." Well, they didn't last year. Hudson Mason didn't do anything against Tennessee. He had a terrible game.
He was horrible. And but then you had, you know, then you had Gurley rushing for 208 yards, and he really didn't have to do a whole lot to get the win. So that's one of the things with Georgia. They run so well. I mean, they run so well. Do you even need anything more than a game manager, a quarterback?
Well, it almost looks like Tennessee is getting to that point where Georgia is getting to that point where they kind of just want to be like Alabama. We're just going to get a stable of running backs and just sit here and say, hey, we're just going to run the ball and take it from there.
Yeah. They've had an embarrassment of riches at the running back position for the last several years, but I think that finally caught up to them in the 2015 class last year. They only signed like one running back, and he's just a two-star to Hamilton County, Georgia. I'm just berating him and degrading him because he's a two-star, but he could be a stud. But they got a 6'2", 220-pound guy named Tay Crowder out of Hamilton, Georgia. He's only a two-star. It's the only running back they signed in this past class. But, I mean, it's tough to get kids to come. And you got Sony Michel and Nick Chubb sitting there in front of you. I mean, it's just who would want to come play behind that, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. And like I said, you know, I mean, Georgia's slowly building up that stable of running backs. And, I mean, Todd Gurley made the right decision going pro. But, I mean, it'd be scary to think about if he was still healthy or still on the Georgia squad right now, how they'd
be ridiculous.
But it just wouldn't even be fair if he was still. I mean, I'd put them probably best running backs in probably the country, if not SEC, if not the country. But, yeah, I mean, that was good. And we appreciate Chris for calling in. We were talking about your predictions before we had Quincy on. Just want to jump back into those. One of the ones that I agreed with you, and it looked like a couple of people on Twitter agreed with you when we posted the article on Twitter today, was Derek Barnett's sack total falling off a little bit. I think he had 10.5 this past season. I mean, how much do you think it's going to drop?
Well, I mean, you know, by 6-7, I mean, which is still good. I mean, that's still a great year, but I mean, they're going to be targeting him this year. I mean, he kind of snuck up on a lot of people the first half of the season last year, but they're not going to be snuck up on by many more. He's on every preseason list you can find, pretty much. And also, just the influx of talent on the interior line, all these young five-star kids, the Tuttles, the McKenzies coming in on the interior line, they're going to be getting a good push there, too, I would imagine, just watching these cats from how they can manhandle everybody I've ever seen them against in these camps. And you got Phillips on the outside, Majid on the outside. I mean, just there's going to be a lot of sacks, I'm sure, but they'll probably be a little more evenly distributed than between just Barnett and Majid this year.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it dropping off. And, you know, like you said, with the new guys and Khalil and Shai Tuttle being in and Owen Williams getting bigger and stronger, I think they've said he's one of the top strongest players in the country in college football. I don't know how they measure that. I guess it's just weight room information that's been released. But especially with the addition of those, and now that there's, you know, a season's worth of film on Derek Barnett, I think he's going to face a lot of double teams, which is going to make
he'll see a lot more tight ends lined up on his side of the field, that's for sure, and, you know, and running back shading him too. So, I mean, he's going to get his, but I just don't think it will be like it was last year. There might be a little sophomore jinx involved, but he's still a great player and one of the best I've ever seen, really, I mean, as a true freshman.
Lee, it looks like we've got a caller on hold right now.
I think that's cute. He stayed on the listen. So.
There he goes. I was going to see if he wanted to come on to answer Chris's question, but Q just hanging out to check in, make sure we weren't bad-mouthing him, I guess.
he just probably wanted to listen to the show and didn't have a link to click where he's at. Probably, I bet he's out there on a football field. So.
Yeah, well, we appreciate him tuning in as well, in addition to being one of our favorite guests. Lee, one of these last predictions is one of my favorite ones that you put out like kind of a top 10. It was number 7. I know you didn't put them in any particular order, but the Daryl McNeil will knock at least 2 people out of a game.
Yeah,
somebody's going to lumber.
Oh yeah, if you watch some of the film from last year, he was hitting, man. I mean, just that guy. If he can do nothing else, he can hit. So I got a feeling. I mean, he's another year stronger, another year wiser. He's going to be laying some people out. Somebody's going to see the cart after they see Ladarius McNeil this year, at least twice, I bet. I don't know if he's going to be targeting or whatever, but somebody's going to want to go out on the cart. So.
All right. Well, as we get ready to wrap up, Lee, we missed it last week. We forgot to bring up our favorite player ever, Parker Boudreau. He committed to Notre Dame.
T-Money.
We've compared him to Torrence Gibson last year. He posted this, and I think SB Nation kind of called him out on it, posting the same generic picture of him in a locker room in gym shorts with the jersey of the school he was visiting. We kind of made fun of him when he put out his top 8, because it was top schools like Alabama and Clemson, but he included Georgia Southern in it. He finally committed to Notre Dame last week. The question I have is, do you believe he is firmly committed to Notre Dame and that commitment sticks through signing day?
You know, I absolutely do not, because as soon as somebody else gives that kid a little love, he'll want to go see them or visit them, and then he'll be wearing their shirt in the locker room. He just doesn't seem like the type to want to stick to one squad. He wants to go where the love is, and he likes to be loved and likes to get all these offers that he supposedly have, all 11 billion of them, however many he has. So I just don't see it, man. And I tell you, I can't really say a whole lot about the commitment video because Garantano made one, so he's put me in a bad spot. I don't look like a hypocrite, but I hope these kids don't start doing that every year, especially the kids that aren't the elite. You know, I mean, this guy, he's a 4-star. He's like a mid-level 4-star. I mean, I can see some of these 5-star kids that, you know, people are telling me they'll play on Sunday for sure, guaranteed, gassing up their heads and everything to make these videos like Garantano. But some of these kids don't – I mean, you don't need to make a video unless you're, like, top 5 in the country. And P-Money is just something else. He doesn't need to be making this ridiculous video where he's dragging a bus for the commitment. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it looks ridiculous.
I think half of that is him being from Florida, and the other half was Bleacher Report. You know, they saw the reaction they got from the Garantano commit video. So I think they decided they're going to get in these kids' ears and say, hey, let us be the one that announces it, and, you know, we'll get you some more pub. And, you know, and every 17, 16, 17-year-old kid wants that to be the center of attention for a day at least. Lee, one thing as we do wrap up is, and I meant to bring this up, we touched on it about 2 weeks ago, and it pertains to the SEC, is the situation going down in Ole Miss with Laramie Tunsil and his stepfather.
Yeah. It's a bad situation.
Is this going to end poorly for Ole Miss?
You know, it probably will, because they've got a willing witness. It's a shame to me, as a man, that this guy can, you know, get in an altercation with a woman that he was once dating with their child, and the child get the better of him, so he's going to make an example of the child and mess everything up for everyone. Now, I know that, obviously, if the kid got paid, that's bad, and I understand all that, but, you know, it is what it is. That goes on an hourly basis in college football. So for this guy to get knocked out by, you know, someone defending their mother, and then to go rat on them or snitch them out, that's just ridiculous to me. It's deplorable, and I hope this guy gets the worst in life that's coming to him. I mean, there's no reason that, you know, him getting knocked out should have anything to do with, you know, messing up this kid's career or messing up Ole Miss's football program just because you know, just because he got in that physical altercation.
Oh, and speaking of careers who might be in jeopardy, I'm going to check with my fiance later on. I don't know if you've seen this in the past hour or so. With Jason Pierre-Paul, you heard about him with the 4th of July fireworks. Yeah. In the past hour, ESPN's Adam Schefter tweeted out a medical chart showing that Jason Pierre-Paul had his right finger, right index finger amputated today.
Oh my gosh.
He tweeted the actual, a picture of the medical report.
Oh my gosh. I knew it was bad. I had no idea there was going to be an amputation involved. Good grief.
Well, the $1 million question is, and that's why I want to talk to my fiance about it, because, you know, she works in the medical field, is to see what kind of violation that is. I mean, everybody's saying it's a HIPAA violation. Depends on how Adam Schefter and ESPN got this medical record, if Jason Pierre-Paul released it to them, or if some nurse in the hospital or doctor in the nurse released it to ESPN. I want to get her opinion on it, and I'll probably tweet out what she says about it. But
yeah, I'm no expert, but I'm pretty sure if you had your own X-ray and you wanted to share it with somebody, that wouldn't be any kind of violation. If somebody, obviously somebody from the doctor's office, allowed them to obtain this, then, you know, that's obviously a HIPAA violation on their part, and somebody's probably going to get their license suspended or taken or fined or something. I'm not really sure how HIPAA violation penalties work, but yeah, I mean, that's got to be some sort of a violation if they got it behind his back. Like, if you gave it to him, obviously, I'm sure it's okay.
Yeah, well, you know, Lee, you know, I appreciate you joining me today on this kind of midweek show, since I'll be out of town in about 7 hours or so, headed toward D.C. in the middle of the evening. We will not be live on Sunday, but we will be back soon. Make sure you download the Vol Sport Radio app from vSporto. It's free on iTunes, and you can follow them on Twitter at Vols Radio. You can follow Lee on Twitter at Lee Crow with an E. Follow myself on Twitter at A.W. Darago, D-A-R-A-G-O. For Lee Crow, I'm Andrew Darago. You've been listening to Checkerboard Radio on the vSporto Network, part of the Vol Sports Radio channel.
3, 2, 1.
CheckerboardRadio.com. You're listening to Checkerboard Radio, a vSporto channel.
Yeah, Barbara, it's Richie. Yeah, look, I ain't never coming home no more. Take it easy.